Hey, welcome to another episode of the Mentally Chill podcast. I'm your host, Kristen Carney, and today I have my friend Kevin Avery on the show. He is an Emmy award-winning writer, and he's a stand-up comedian, and we talk really in depth about beating ourselves up and never feeling like we're part of a group and isolation and all sorts of things that someone with or without depression can relate to. If you have tendencies to do these, you can maybe slip into a depression. And if you do these things because of depression, I feel like your depression can get worse. And I know for me, I have to really work hard to not isolate and not to beat myself up too hard. So I hope this episode resonates with you guys. And as always, thank you to everyone on Patreon, specifically Sam, Jayant, and Kim. I hope I pronounced your name right. Jayant, not Kim. I can handle Kim, unless it was like Kim and I got it wrong. Jayant, Kim, and Sam, thanks for joining the community. And you guys made it just in time because next Saturday, July 21st, we'll be doing our second ever movie night. And I'm not sure what movie we're doing quite yet. I was thinking about showing one of my favorites, but then I was like, oh no, what if I show one of my favorites and it feels like everyone hates it? Then I'll get really self-conscious and have sweaty armpits and I don't feel like it's hot enough as it is and I don't want more sweaty armpits. So I might pick something that I've never seen before. I will announce it soon enough. But if you want to join us for that movie night, all you have to do is sign up on Patreon at patreon.com/mentallychill. And I hope to see you guys there. So anyway, enjoy the show. When I text messaged you and I said, what would you want to talk about on the episode?
Yeah.
You said feeling like a failure and overworking oneself to compensate and also possibly being mean to yourself when you aren't where you want to be.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I can feel these things because I'm not doing what you're doing, which is writing for the Jim Jeffrey show. You were an Emmy award winner two different times for John Oliver and then another time for John Oliver.
Yeah, that was fun.
I mean, and you're feeling like a failure. You're coming on a girl with just a podcast.
Well,
hey guys, Kristen cutting in here. I didn't mean to say coming on a girl, and that really wasn't an easy edit to fix. I meant to say coming on the show of a girl with just a podcast. But I think if you're all like I am, which is 12 years old, that you'll giggle. And I needed to call out that I said coming on a girl, and that's all. Okay, goodbye. Back to the show.
You know, that's the great trick of failure of it. It is. It's everywhere. It's got nothing. It really has nothing to do with where you are.
I know. And honestly, so we went to the Emmys together. I was your date, which was so much fun.
That was super fun.
So cool.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful for the experience. However, what I realized from it was that that's not the end. Like,
no.
You don't feel satisfied after that because you were so nervous, but then you were, of course, happy when you won. But I don't know if it was that night or the next time we talked, but you immediately seemed to jump right back into, I'm not enough.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you just won a goddamn Emmy. Can you give yourself a week maybe to feel okay? But because I have a similar brain, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what. Oh God, because you know what? The next day, it really sucked because it the Emmys are on Sunday, and then I had to go back to work on Monday.
Right.
And so I really could have used the day to sit with it and to kind of go, take, you know, enjoy. Here's the thing about this, and this is one of the reasons why I asked you to go. It's because I felt like...
You're like, hey, I'll bring a loser to make me feel better.
I need someone to lift me up. No, but I felt like you, like me, would have an appreciation for just this
the experience.
Thing. The experience.
Yeah.
Not so much in a starfuckery way, but in it just like... Isn't this crazy?
Yeah.
Isn't this nuts? And I feel like we appreciate it in different ways, but that's also
well,
awesome.
Well, because you go the starfuckery way.
I go the starfuckery way. I'm trying to. But I just thought, I think she would have fun like I would have fun there.
And I did. And you told me that when we got there. You were like, I'm so excited to just explain this all to you because this is how I felt when I first saw it.
It's nuts.
It is insane. And I part of me is like, wow, this is really crazy, this reality and the fact that this is reality for celebrities.
Yeah.
But then the other side is you're almost still just so in reality, which is you're in the car, even though it's a nice Escalade car, you're still driving the same streets that you would drive every day monotonously to work. And you're still seeing the same, you know, bums on the street and same CVS you drive.
Yeah.
So it's so weird because it's so detached from reality, but yet it's right there in reality.
Yeah. And I mean,
and there's a sense of like, wow, this is, I did it. But then there's a sense of, this is real life. I just drove by a CVS to get here.
Yeah.
You know, like it's really not that great. And I have a, I'm afraid, honestly, to become you.
That's, oh, really?
That's not supposed to be, that's not supposed to be insulting.
No, wait, explain that. I think I get,
you know
what,
I'm saying. Yeah.
I think.
I'm afraid that if I experience success, then the next day or next week, I will be back low again going, oh no, now I have to do keep it going and try to do even better. And I don't feel like I can. And it actually didn't feel as good as I thought it was going to be. And then have this constant wheel of beating yourself up and trying constantly just to win all the time. Or,
well, no matter what happens in your life, I think unless you can really find this place where you, inside you, that's like, I'm okay with me, with myself, anywhere I am. Not to go back to the Emmys, but that experience, there's always something to take away from it that's a little thing, but it's kind of special. And it's not because it's the Emmys per se, but it's just because this is this crazy experience. I'm a fan of showbiz as just a, you know, like one of my idols is Sammy Davis Jr. And so I have an appreciation of just this kind of this folly, this all this insanity of what, you know, and I can enjoy it and then walk away. And I was able to really appreciate, I was very nervous. I remember turning to you at one point and going, I am so stressed out right
now. You did.
And so I was just like, but it was really a shallow, it was like, I really want to win. Like, I'll be honest. I was like, it would be so nice to win this because, you know, I still feel like just a guy just out here trying to make it, just like everybody else trying to, you know, do my thing.
But you
like
had that feeling even though you had already won an Emmy the year before.
Yeah, because sometimes you get a taste and it's
not enough.
It's never enough.
It's the constant chasing of the high in life.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I know that I am successful. I'm very fortunate to be successful.
I don't like you like this. I want you lower self
esteem. Well, but I understand there's the understanding and then the feeling of it. Like, I can tell myself, I know, you know, 12-year-old Kevin would look at me and go, what the hell, what?
Mm-hmm.
What are you upset about? But I feel career-wise that I've strayed from where I wanted to go, and I'm trying to right the path. You know, we've talked about this. And so that's where my frustration is right now. The thing that I'm trying to get that I didn't get, and I'm seeing other people get, and I'm, you know, and I'm happy for them. But I feel guilty for even feeling a twinge of like, ah, shit, I wanted that, you
Don't
know.
Don't feel guilty.
Yeah. It's supernatural as long as you're not an asshole about it.
Right.
I think we've all known people who just like who are just haters, you know, all around. But so yeah,
don't deny yourself the human feelings. I think feeling guilt around something like that is natural because you want to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll lose what makes you a good writer if you deny yourself of true feelings.
That's true.
You know,
that's
and true. Like that's why I hate when you know, like something in history, this happened recently. I followed this account on Instagram about history and they posted a picture of Hitler's, what's his name, Goebbels guy, his like right hand man at his wedding day. And it's not to praise Hitler and this guy. It's to not erase history because it's what's defining us now.
It's the truth. It's honest.
Yeah. And so someone reported, or people reported that picture. I don't know how many people. It's a huge account that has millions of followers. Mm-hmm. But Instagram took it down. And it was so disappointing. Weird. It's like, why are we trying to pretend history didn't exist? So that's what I'm saying with you not wanting to feel guilty about your feelings. Like, if you had the opportunity to take away that person's good fortune, you wouldn't.
Oh, no.
You know,
no,
it's
no,
not
no,
like
no.
that. It's
but
just you're like, ah,
check
damn.
Myself. I just I want to check myself, make sure I'm not being just an asshole
getting
about
too
it. And I don't. I mean, like, because I have friends who have been successful, and it's nice to see what they're doing. And so,
but yeah,
you know,
I mean,
and also I'm not competing with them for the same things. And that's a lesson you kind of have to learn.
That's like, a good point, because I was just going to say, it is hard if you're seeing your friends get the thing because they get a pizza and you want a slice of pizza and you're over in the corner really hungry and you're like, you know, I'd really like a slice of pizza, but I'm happy that they get pizza. But
except
what you just
maybe
said,
I'm a vegetarian.
Right. What you just said is you're going for something different. Yeah. And so that's good maybe that you don't have the same pizza.
Yeah. It does you no good to look at somebody else's success and then be pissed off or annoyed or frustrated that you didn't get their thing because, you know, everybody's story is different.
Right. Well, you mentioned a long, not a long time ago, but I think the last time we hung out about not knowing your identity and your onstage identity, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And how it's frustrating. But I think for people in their everyday life, I know for me, I've struggled with my identity my entire life. And I think that has caused me to isolate and it's caused me to not move forward because if I don't know who I am, how am I expecting other people to know who I am? And how can I pursue anything if I don't know who I am? Basically, the lack of identity can really affect people's... That's a lovely
I
bird
that.
Sound.
That is
oh
amazing.
My God.
That's wonderful.
I just fell asleep. It was so soothing. Holy. But people, when they have a lack of identity, I think feel very depressed or will become depressed because you want to fit in with a group as a human being. You need to belong and know where you belong.
Yeah.
So where are you with that in terms of not just your stage persona?
I think identity is something that, well, on stage evolves. So I'm not necessarily worried about that. And also, you never know how people see you. You never know how you look. I was thinking about this today. Like, you never know how people are perceiving you. And, you know, we all think of ourselves as one way and then everyone else sees this other thing. But isolation has been an issue with me for most of my life, most of my adult life, I'll say. The last time I was in therapy, I remember my therapist was like, yeah, you know, you spend all this time out in a world that's not your own. And so you're by yourself there.
You mean not your own in terms of like your work? Or
well,
like?
Yeah. So I came out of college and I got these tech day jobs. Everyone else would go and get a restaurant job over the summer. And then here I was going to work with my dad, like a 9-to-5. This is probably the closest I feel like I've come to real. I don't have a firm grasp or understanding of depression necessarily. There are people who really suffer from it, obviously, and I don't think I have, but I feel like this was the closest I came to any sort of just breakdown or, you know, because I'd come out of college, I'd lost all my friends. I had this other career aspiration, this singing group thing.
Oh, really?
So I was kind of lost, and then I had this job, and then I had moved back. I was back at home with my parents, and I was just miserable every day. Now, when I think back, I had friends, and I would go out and do things, and I was just starting or just about to start comedy. But there was this pocket of time where I just really hated my life.
That's a really, really, really hard time. A friend of mine's son is 19, and totally confused and not doing great because it's this transitional time and they didn't want to go to college because they want to do something more creative. And now they're just kind of lost in the zone. And when I graduated from college, I had such a hard time and I would love to tell everyone in that world that it will pass. It just feels like forever.
Well, what did you go to college for?
Oh God, just communications, which I had no real direction in my mind. I secretly wanted to do something grand, like Hollywood or show business, but I didn't have the audacity to do that. And so I was going into advertising. I went to school for communications. And then after that, because I had internships as a writer at some ad agencies during college, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to a portfolio school, which is the next step for writing and advertising, for uh-huh. getting a job. And so I had this kind of interim from when I graduated from college to when I was going to the portfolio school. I was moving away to Chicago for that, but I had a year between the two. And I was working as a receptionist at a sanitation company. And people were calling and saying, you know, I'm from like this like podunk area, and they're like, I'd answer the phone and I can't do accents, so please forgive me for whatever this terrible accent
this
I'm about
one.
To do. But they'd be like, yeah, can I leave this cat in my dumpster? Do I need to put her in a bag? Or can I just throw her body in there? And I was like, oh, my dear Lord, if this is what happens after college and this is life, I don't want it.
Yeah. Well.
And so it was a long year.
First of all, that was a solid cat in the dumpster lady.
Thank you.
So well done there. Yeah. I mean, there's no way. You're really sort of, it's like you're trapped in a well and you just can't see out. You have no way of knowing where this is going to go, And so that period in my life, I was just so hating my life and myself. And I was a very, I've always been a very shy person. I'd never been a very confident person. And I had to sort of learn to, I don't know if I've learned to fake it to an extent or what, because that person still, I could feel him still in me, still dropping the ball from time to time on things. And so I felt like I had nothing and no life, and just sort of like was, well, here I am, and this is what I'm gonna be forever, I guess. I mean, when I started stand-up, that at least was like a rope ladder to get out of the well. But there was a time when there was 3 years when I wasn't doing stand-up at all. And I was just like, oh, no, what? Well, now what?
Just slipping back down it, because now the rope's covered with shit.
Yeah,
you're just
exactly.
like, oh, my God, I just did stand-up? What was I thinking?
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. So I'm, you know, but so now my problem is that I have a lot of friends. I don't have a social circle.
Same.
I don't have a group of friends. And I often feel bad or frustrated about that. And I have... I'm cool with different groups of friends. It's really weird. I just feel like I'm in this no man's land.
We're the same.
You know, yeah.
And I've never been able to have a group. But I it's weird, because I'm surprised that people who can't make a group just don't end up making a group. But I think it's so against our nature, because there's people that I know that don't have groups, and I connect them so well. And then we just kind of do this one-off thing where we see each other. It's like me and you.
Yeah.
Like, we never hang out in a social setting.
No, we don't know any.
We don't know any of the same people.
I don't know who you know.
I don't know who you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I would think that eventually we'd link up and just be like, oh, you don't have a group, you don't have a group. But I think our nature is just to not be in a group, and I think that's okay.
Well, I like being part of a group. I've always been drawn to that.
Wait, so why don't you have a group? Because you're a person who could have a group.
Yeah, I think I've pushed myself away from people somehow. I think, I don't know. Sometimes it's just logistics. I think the older you get, the more, you know, like I have this one crew of people that I roll with, but like I get invited to the holiday party every year, and we're friends, and we have gone to, when one of them has a big thing or event, I go to that, I get invited to that. But I still sometimes feel like an outsider, because I feel like they're, and that might be my own, that just might be what I'm putting in my head, but I feel like they've come up together. They've been together for a while, mm-hmm. and I'm this guy that they've welcomed into the group, but I'm still a little bit disconnected from that. It's that group of friends that you get the call, like, what are we all doing?
What would that do for you if you had that group?
I would feel like I belonged somewhere, because right now I feel isolated. I feel, you know what it is? It makes you, okay, so one day, I remember when I lived in San Francisco and I was walking to my car. I lived near a high school, and there were all these high school kids out there, and I felt intimidated.
Oh my God, I get so intimidated by high schoolers.
But
these are
kids, like, who gives a shit? But I realized I feel this way because I don't belong to him. I'm just this nomad wandering through town, and anybody can take me down. A little, you know what? It's that feeling.
It's like an insecure feeling, right? Yeah. When you're alone, and I struggle with that all of the time. And I wish, and I was actually talking about this recently, about 4th of July. Mm-hmm. I wish that I was the type that wanted to go to 4th of July parties and just be basic and whatever. But I don't have it in me, but my life would be so much easier because instead I was alone, isolated, crying mm-hmm. on the 4th of July and then went to a movie by myself at like 10 o'clock at night.
What'd you see?
I saw American Animals.
Oh, I wanted to see
that
shit.
Okay, we'll talk about that at the end during Schizophilmia.
Right. Okay.
Which is a
nice
movie segment.
I like that.
Thank you. So I understand the desire, but I think that even if a group was like, Kristen, we want you, I would be like, no, I'm okay. I'm way too much of a loner. And actually, friends of mine, you were talking about having the group that's like you're part of it, but you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely have that group here.
Yeah.
And I love having them here because I know if it's a Saturday night and I am lonely and I have enough motivation to want to go do something, they're right there for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not part of their immediate circle. And I think if I pushed myself into it more, I would be. But I've chosen not to be. But then I have to be okay with when I'm alone and no one's contacting me because I've put myself in this position.
Yeah, you have to be okay with it. But I think you have to try to open yourself up to those because it feels good when you just are out and you're like, look at all these new people. Look at these folks, you know, it feels nice to be, not that everyone, you have to be a part of a scene or it's not about that. It just feels nice to be communal.
It definitely does.
Better word, I guess. Maybe that is the word.
But. It is for sure. And I will have those feelings once I'm in the situation, but leading into it.
Yeah.
It's the same with like doing stand up. When I do stand up, I love the actual moment of being on stage, but I hate everything else leading up to it.
Yeah.
And that's how I am with groups of friends. Like I like being there in the moment, but anything leading up to it and the planning and the like commiserating, like, no, let me just be there and then leave and I'll be totally happy. And so I tend to let those feelings bog me down and then that keeps me away and keeps me alone in my room.
But I think we really kind of beat ourselves up. And when we try to do something nice for ourselves or just try to appreciate something and
well, this is a really smooth segue because I wanted to talk about beating ourselves up.
Yes.
I don't feel like I will ever lose the grip on the beating myself up. What's your beat up process like? Like, what are you saying to yourself?
It used to be you're not working hard enough. And now I'm like, look, dude, you couldn't work any harder. But But it really is, you're not where you're supposed to be. Or so, you've somehow screwed. Here's the thing. I can pinpoint where I began my failure. But I constantly have told myself what a failure I am. Even with those dumb statues sitting in my, you know, it's right? hard because you.
They should be holding signs that say failure.
Like, yeah.
Even though we're here.
You screwed up.
You're the worst.
Mm-hmm.
What would you feel like today, though, if you didn't have those Emmys? How much worse would you feel? You would really beat yourself up then.
I don't even know if I would. It was such a weird thing that I would be part of that in the first place, that I would end up there. It, you know, Emmys or what, it's just something in the background. It's something to be like, it would be nice to be there. That would be fun. But if anything, all that is I every once in a while allow it to be validation. And maybe this isn't even healthy, but to be like, hey, remember how far you've come.
I think your Emmys are really just very expensive sticky notes.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I'm just going to put this here on the mirror and stick it up there and say, you are beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what you're using them for. It's like, okay, I'm not the worst, and here they are to remind me.
But it doesn't, I refuse to be cynical about it and be like, oh, none of these awards. Blah, blah.
Good.
It's all
good.
It's all, yes, it is all bullshit to an extent, but it meant something that I got to go, and it was
of
exciting
course.
For me, and it was fun, and it was, you know, but that's all it is. The work is something different, and And
so I'm noticing with you what you're saying about beating yourself up. It doesn't seem to be the quality of your work you're not beating yourself up for. It's the lack of the amount of work.
Well, I'm confident in, like, I have a solid career.
So you don't doubt yourself? That's really what I'm trying to ask.
No, I doubt myself all the time. I mean, because the work that I do that means the most to me, I'm like, boy, I don't know if this is good.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm like, oh, I know this shit is good. When I'm doing something I really love, which you should have that feeling.
Definitely.
You're allowed to have that. You know, I don't know, but there's always that sense of, is this any good? Or is that, you know?
And I think that's obviously healthy.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have that. But do you think you're in a place where it's unhealthy, the amount that you do it? Because I do think there's a line that you can cross where it's unhealthy versus where it's motivating.
I think I'm just now kind of getting over that a little bit, but it has been unhealthy because it's not the work as much as it is where I am, where you are. I saw some quote that I can't remember it. I'm going to butcher it, but it was like, remember when you wanted the things you have now?
I just pulled out the butcher paper.
I mean, like.
But yes, I know what you're saying. And that's the showing yourself when you're 12 years old, what you have now. When I was younger, I was obsessed with Talk Soup.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to come to Los Angeles. And that was like my end all be all was Talk Soup.
Which
on E!
John Henson. Oh, John Henson.
Yeah.
Okay.
After Kinnear. And I came to Los Angeles when I was 16 with my dance troupe. And I remember I said to the driver, where do they shoot Talk Soup? And he looked at me like, what? And I just assumed everybody knew where you'd shoot Talk Soup. Of course they would.
Of course.
Of course. So then years go by and I move to LA. I meet John Henson. And, you know, it was like 14-year-old me was dying, but 25-year-old me was
through stand-up? Was it?
Yeah. He was at the Improv.
And
He, you know, he was just like a regular person. I tried to go, Kristen, but like when you were 14, you'd be dying right now.
Yeah.
And I have his phone number in my phone. And I'm like, I'm not impressed as an adult. And it's just disappointing because I want to have that wonderment that I would have as a kid.
Yeah.
But it's that constant, I guess, bringing it like full circle. The reality, it's like a cool reality, but it's still reality, which is a little boring.
Yes, that in and of itself, though, is that you have to be able to appreciate that. Like, this is just your life and that it's not a big deal now that you're meeting
your
idols. And so that's great. And there are other things you can get excited about. And, you know.
But also, I think I'm in an emotional place where I can't feel excitement. Like, I don't feel happiness and excitement.
Yeah.
So maybe like the other day, when I was taping the episode with Dr. Drew, Jeff Garland walked in and was like, because we taped at the Improv in the green room, and Jeff Garland walked in and we were kind of like, oh, who should stay in here? And me 10 years ago, I was like, oh my God, Larry David's right-hand man. I would have been dying. But instead I was like, oh no, Jeff Garland's here. Now what are we going to do? Like, it was more of a burden because I'm like, shit, we have to stop taping. And
Jeff.
But I don't feel... you know, I mean, it's awesome to be in that circumstance, but I think I feel nothing.
What does excite you? Something excites you.
Nothing excites me. Nothing excites me right now. I need to get back on an antidepressant because I really can't experience any sort of happiness or pleasure at the moment. I really can't. And I know that because I'm writing a screenplay that I really, really love, but I feel nothing about it. You know,
writing
I don't
clinically. So to
I'm writing because I know this is what will make me happy once I can feel happy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's frustrating because I can describe how it should feel, but I can't feel it.
Yeah.
But it's the combination of all the things that you've been talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
The beating yourself up, the feeling like a failure, not being part of a group, not knowing your identity. All of those things basically plague me every day. And the not being where you're supposed to be.
I've had to kind of just throw that out. That's the big thing for me.
The not where you're supposed to be. Yeah. Right. And that's the theme since I've known you, really. I've heard you say, it's not that I think when we hang out, it's not like we're necessarily just being super existential or something about, but mm-hmm. whenever we're together, somehow that comes up that you're yeah. not happy of where you are.
Yeah.
And then I want to shake you as an outsider.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, God damn you.
Yeah.
But then I understand because I am your brain. But let me yeah. just tell you this real quick.
Sure.
Not that this will change anything for you, but if you can feel joy or happiness, mm-hmm. My dad loves Jim Jefferies.
No.
And loves the Jim Jefferies show so much. And so the last time I was home, he put on demand or whatever mm-hmm. he had it on, and we watched like 10 episodes in a row. Like we watched the whole season basically nice. Right then. But I was like, my friend Kevin writes for Jim Jefferies. You know, oh yeah, that's cool. Oh yeah. And so finally there was an episode where they showed all the writers this picture of you guys. And my dad was just so excited.
I feel like I should get some sort of check for that or something. There's some SAG issues.
Well, check it out. But my dad was like, you know, starstruck-ish because my friend Kevin writes for the show that he loves so much.
That's awesome.
But it would be cool for maybe one day I'm the person he's starstruck-ish with, you know?
Yes. Look.
But so you should feel good. I mean, you're in a position that... And I know so many people can tell you this, and it just, unless it's where you want to be, it won't matter. But I want you to stop beating yourself up because you're such a nice person and you don't deserve to beat yourself up. And I always think about this viral video that I saw years ago of, maybe you're familiar with it, but it was like telling an artist how to sketch you versus mm-hmm. how someone else told him to sketch them.
Ooh.
And it was such... I cried so hard in that video because yeah. especially the way I perceive myself. So
I think I've heard of this. I need to go watch this.
It was such a good video. And I feel like it was 5 years ago, like that prime where like things were starting to go viral and like people were doing a good job with them. And now it's just like trash. But I mean, there was also trash then. But so there was a guy, like a sketch artist or mm-hmm. artists, and the person would sit down and tell them how to sketch him because he was like blindfolded or something, or he couldn't uh-huh. see them. And so if it was me, for example, I'd say like, well, I have a really long, like narrow face. I'm very asymmetrical. My nose points the wrong direction. You know, I have like skinny lips, and I don't, you know, I would describe myself a certain way. So he sketched it based on the description.
Uh-huh.
And then that person's friend sits down and tells them how to sketch them. And the sketch turns out beautifully because that's how we see
so
ourselves.
Weird.
We see ourselves in such a funhouse mirror.
Yeah.
And so you see yourself, I think, not totally, but a little bit in terms of your success in a funhouse mirror. I think you appreciate it, but I think there's the side to you that just won't quiet down, which will drive you to go forward, but will also drive you to be sad.
I mean, I've been at this for a long time, and so it's more a frustration. Now there is, of course, the personal insecurities, and you know, I literally was talking to someone hours before I got here about the way I looked and pointing something out that I, you know, that type of thing doesn't go away unless you find a way to change it or something. But so yeah, that part of me too. When the way people's perception of you, I think I've always been a little obsessed with it.
Same.
Because I hope it's different than what I see.
Same.
I'm like, please God, please let this. And I think it is different, but I also feel like I'm hiding a lot about me.
Same. We're so similar.
I know.
We really are. Yeah. I'm hiding that I'm you, basically.
But
it's true. I don't do a lot of stand up at the moment because for several reasons. One of them, huge reason, is because the way I perceive myself to look on stage,
mm-hmm.
I am disgusted with myself.
Yeah.
And the anxiety that I go through with what I think I look like on stage
mm-hmm.
has basically made me run away from stand-up
hmm.
because I see other girls that are doing stand-up and I think, well, this person can do it because they look like this and their jokes match that. And then this person can do it because they're so like cheeky and their clothes are cheeky too. So they match. And then I see myself and I'm like, oh, I look like an evil, mean bitch who's not funny.
Uh-huh.
And whose clothes fit awkwardly, And I don't want anyone to see that. And so I hide away in my room.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to deal with the discomfort that I go through when I put myself there.
Interesting. See, I have the reverse. I feel that I appear the best on stage. I will never be cooler. I will never be more interesting. I will never look better than when I'm on stage. When I step off stage, I got to do all the things, stand a certain way. Don't
or opposite,
say
yeah.
The wrong thing. I mean, sometimes I'm comfortable and most of the time I can be comfortable enough now to just be myself. But like, I do still feel like I'm cultivated a version of myself off stage that is presentable. But on stage, I'm just like, this is what I do. Unless I'm eating it on stage. And then we all feel like, oh, boy, this is...
Yikes. Yeah. Bad pants choice, I guess.
Yeah.
But so. I'm the total opposite. Absolutely. Like, when I'm off stage, if I walk off stage, I feel comfortable in my... I mean, not totally, but I feel comfortable-ish to my skin. I feel more at ease to say whatever it is I want to say. But when I'm on stage, I feel like people are staring at me so hard and judging me so hard, and they're seeing what I'm seeing, and I don't want them to see what I see. But what's weird is there's another side to me that when I am on stage, I forget about those things. I think I have very good stage presence.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can hold an audience well, and I feel like I can, you know... I just feel I can feel the charisma-ish thing happening.
Yeah.
But I can't get over the hump of before leading up to that moment to even get to that moment.
Yeah.
You know, I overanalyze it to death where it's just too much torture, and then I won't allow myself to shine on stage because I won't allow myself to get there anymore.
See, to hear that from you is, I find that very interesting because, I mean, the last time we talked, I think I told you, my first memory of you is not where we actually first met or performed together, but my impression, I just saw a comic.
And you want to know
why? You reminded me, why?
Because we are in New York, and I am myself in New York.
No. The first time I saw you as a performer.
Thought you were going to say at New York Comedy Club when you saw me up.
Yeah. But this was before then. This was, remember that spot, Barney's Beanery?
Oh, yes. You were telling me about that last time.
That's my impression of you for the first time. And I just, there are certain people I see and go, oh, that's a comic. That's the impression I had of you.
You told me that, and that was literally the most flattering thing anyone's ever said to me. Because all I've wanted to be is perceived as a comic. And I think I get so paranoid that's not how people see me that I hide away. And so when you did tell me that, it genuinely made me feel so good. Didn't make me necessarily believe it, but
I mean, you know.
But that to me is like, that's a badge of honor because that's who I am inside. I am a comedian, and I get angry when I think people don't see me as a comedian when I'm on stage.
Yeah.
And anyway, we could go on and on and on. It's a whole therapy session for me, but I don't know. We're so wrapped up in wanting to be good, I think. And I think you're wrapped up in wanting to be good. And there's nothing wrong with that, but we have to take a step back and allow ourselves to be human beings.
Yes, but you also have to realize you already are good. You already have, you know
no,
what I'm
but
saying?
You are already good.
Well, you're already
good. No, you're good.
Oh, come on now with the goodness. But yeah, I mean, the things that we want most of the time, to an extent, we already have them.
Right.
And to go back to something you said before, though, the lack of excitement about certain things also comes from a maturity in this business. And I remember I was telling somebody recently, maybe it was you, but when Kamau sold the show, this was my first writing job. And we had been writing partners for a long time, and we'd been trying to get on shows as a team, and you know, we near misses and all this shit. And so both of us had been around for a while, I remember getting the call from him, and he goes, yeah, well, I think we meaning him and Chris Rock, I didn't sell the show. But I go, I think we just may have sold a show to FX.
That's awesome.
And I was like, okay. And I remember I was sitting at a stoplight, just like in Los Feliz, like, All right, well, I guess we'll see. Not celebrating, not like, let's go pop some bottles. Right. None of that.
It's reality
it
again.
It was just like, we sort of like, all right, well, let's not get too crazy.
Right.
Let's, we'll see how this plays out, and then we'll just go do our jobs.
Right. just drive by another CVS.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think that just comes from having been doing this for a while, and it's unavoidable. But then there are moments that get you excited and get, you know, and you have to recognize them, and you have to be able to allow them and sort of bask in them, and, you know.
Yeah.
I try to do that.
Well, you better. Okay, so we're going to do some segments.
All right.
So the first segment, Schizophilia,
mm-hmm.
which obviously an amazing name.
Yeah. No, that's solid.
Thank you. It's a humiliating name. It's terrible. So the one I want to recommend, I'll do in a second because you wanted to know about American Animals. It was all right. It's a heist movie, nothing original. I'd never really want to see it again. It took like a good 30, 40 minutes to get there, I felt like. So mm-hmm. at first I was wanting to check my phone. You know, I was just kind of bored. You know, a movie isn't great when you go to the bathroom during it and then choose the slow hand dryer.
Oh,
you know, like when you choose, first of all, to actually wash your hands, that's not a good sign that you're not in a hurry. And then second of all, when you're like, I think I'll go for the air dryer.
Uh-huh.
That's not a good movie you're seeing.
Yeah, that's true. Jeez.
So what was the one that you wanted to talk about?
I relatively recently watched the Stanford Prison Experiment, and that really speaks
to... Oh, what was that about?
That's this experiment years ago, I think in the 70s or early 80s, they built a mock prison, and they had... They divided people up as inmates and guards, and then they had them act as such. And it was, and they had these kids living in this thing as if they were really in prison, and the guards had to come in on shifts.
This was done a long time ago.
Yeah.
I saw it in my psychology class that I took, like psychology 101, and it was so crazy.
It's nuts.
It's really interesting to see. And that is why on my Instagram bio, mm-hmm. I have "Bandwagons are dumb, please stop it." Because that film shows how basically boys became Nazis, essentially. They were told to harm another boy by electroshocking them or something, right? Or like zapping them. It was a zap. Am I thinking of the same movie?
Maybe. They were definitely harming these people.
Yeah.
They were like beating them up with, I think they only had nightsticks or something like that. And maybe they had whatever those things are that you can shock people with. But,
yeah, like a taser type of.
They might have had tasers, but it was the 80s, so I don't know if those were.
What was the name of this again?
The Stanford Prison Experiment. That being said, I saw something recently, an article that says a lot of that research was not true, or a lot of stuff about it isn't true. Mm. Like the movie's catching some shit lately.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, they did use it in my college class,
well,
and I, since I did go to Harvard, I'm just kidding. I did not go to Harvard.
I was like, oh, okay.
No, I remember watching that, and I was not a great student. However, that really stuck with me watching that because I'm fascinated with social psychology and sociology mm-hmm. and the way people interact together. And I find that we should be smarter than we are, the way we become sheep to fit in with everyone else because the desire to belong or to mm-hmm. not, like, there was something in that same class that we watched on video of another thing from like the 60s, and it had a sign. There was a sign. It was just psychological experiments,
mm-hmm.
nothing like that extreme, but
yeah.
they had in one instance a sign up that said, "Don't step on the black tiles." It was just a black and white tile floor. There was nothing there was nothing wrong with those tiles. It wasn't like they were freshly painted. In the video, they show the people like jumping from one tile to the other.
Wow.
These are like people, adult business people.
Uh-huh.
And they follow the rules
mm-hmm.
for no reason.
Yeah.
Other than most likely they don't want to be judged by someone else.
People don't want to get yelled at. People don't want to be judged.
They don't want to stand out. They want to, you know. So that was interesting. But the movie that I want to recommend mm-hmm. for this schizophilia
mm-hmm.
is the movie Harold and Maude from the 70s. Have you ever seen it?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Do you know what it's about?
Okay, wait. Isn't it supposed to be terrible? Or maybe
it is. It did. So it tanked, and then it became like a cult hit.
But is it a bad movie?
No, it was good. I mean, okay. It was quirky and definitely like indie. And I mean, it was made in, I think, like 1971 or something like that. But the theme is great. And it was so funny, but really dark, super dark comedy.
Yeah.
So Harold, the kid, he's 20 years old. He just has like a propensity for death and like depression and suicide. And so he's constantly, his only hobbies are going to funerals of strangers. He just goes to funerals.
Interesting.
And fakes suicides constantly. So he's from this really rich family. His mother's very rich. And all he does all day is basically trick her in, trying to trick her into thinking that he's committed suicide. And so he meets he meets Maude. And Maude is this 80-year-old crazy lady who also goes to funerals. And they strike up this unusual friendship. And he has no friends. You know, he has he socializes with no one. He's very isolated. He only wears, like, you know, dark colors. And he's got very pale. He just looks sickly. And then he meets Maude. And she kind of brings him to life. Yeah. And she teaches him to live and how to live and to enjoy living and to see the beauty in being alive and to stop being so busy thinking about death while you're alive. And then I won't say what happens, but they have, you know, like a strange relationship and people are like, that's weird. You're 20 and she's 80 and are you in love? Like, what's going on? But at the end, he I won't say because I'm going to spoil it, but it's such a good, funny, if you're into dark comedy, fucked up comedy, it almost seems like a British film, like British comedy style, but it's all about depression and his suicide ideation, and yeah, so if you're ever bored one night, you should check it out. It's really dark, really funny, but next segment, antidepressant of the week.
Oh.
What's something that made you feel good this week?
Oh, I'd been working on this big project for a while, and then I went and did sort of a presentation, let's just call it. It was the thing I had to write and learn and do, you know, and I wasn't sure if it was any good, and I did it, and it turned out just fine, and it reminded me of, you know, my power, so to speak. I'm using air quotes. Well, a long time ago, I had a tumor in my leg, and I was told it was cancer.
Oh, my God.
And I went through this whole thing. It was a couple months of this weird cancer scare. And then they got it out of me. I get this call from the doctor, and they were like, you're fine.
Wow.
It's not cancer.
Uh-huh.
It's all good.
Wow.
You're great. And I remember having this feeling of, oh, I can do anything.
Yeah, finding out you don't have cancer sounds like the best antidepressant in the world.
I was afraid to die. I was afraid that I would die, and my fear was that I wasn't going to get to do the things that I wanted to do. All the things that I thought I could do, or all the you know.
Yeah.
And now suddenly I was like, I can go do it. I can do it, and I could do it all. And I just felt that.
Yeah, they call that the I don't have cancer high.
It's very hard to keep and remember that. And I have to work very hard to try to remind myself of this situation. But you know, this was that same feeling. Like, oh yeah, remember what you can do. Remember what you're good at. Remember that you have I always say every day is an opportunity to fight. Not that everything has to be equated to fighting, but you know, you get out of bed, you have the chance to do the thing that you do.
Yeah.
And I felt that strength once because I just put this crazy burden on me. And once it was lifted, I was like, oh shit, yeah, I can go back to being me and doing the things that I'm good at. And remembering that I'm good at what I do.
So you had a burden lift this week.
Yes.
It'll be back though. It'll be back.
It will be back, but I feel I grew a little bit.
Good. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing, and this is where I do a callback to, is it okay if you're angry at someone else's accomplishments?
Well,
cuz that's what I am at you. I'm just kidding. No, but that's awesome. I'm very happy for you.
Thanks.
Also very jealous. I didn't have anything like monumental this week. This week was actually a very hard week, and I thought many minutes now on what I was going to say for this. Mm-hmm. And I don't have anything to offer for my antidepressant of the week this week, which feels shitty because I don't want to be that person on the podcast making people listening feel worse. But I just didn't. I had a really, really, really hard week. Mm-hmm. And I think the only thing I would say would be my antidepressant of the week would be the fact that I have cool listeners send me messages telling me how much they like the show.
Yeah.
But it's been a long week. It's been a very long week. Okay. So for F Dat Shit, that's the last segment of the show. Mm-hmm. This is kind of an interesting little study. It says, are gut bacteria to blame for anxiety, depression, and obesity? Obesity brought on by high-fat diet may be accompanied by changes in gut bacteria that alter brain chemistry in such a way as to promote anxiety and depression. But when they gave the mice antibiotics, it changed the composition of their gut bacteria, reduced inflammation, and improved insulin signaling in the brain, and reduced signs of anxiety and depression. I wonder how they monitor depression in mice. Is it like they don't want to get out of bed? Like, what is it?
So you're saying the mice that mice...
Those mice with the specific bacteria had more anxiety.
And they're... Okay, I see. And so they're saying... And this is...
This could humans possibly could be, okay, be in humans gotcha. As well.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So where can people find you? I always hate this part with all the plugs. I'm awkward with it. Where can people find you?
You could find me... on Twitter at Kevin Avery, and Instagram is Kevin Avery Comedy, and I don't know why I asked that. That's what it is, Kevin Avery Comedy, and otherwise I don't know what. Watch the Jim Jefferies show, and that's really it.
I love the obligation of being a writer for a show, and you have to kind of say.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't have to say that.
I know you don't have to, but it's more like.
People should. Spread the word. You know what? For some reason. Well, yeah, I'm not going to get into all that. But yeah, if you like the show, spread the word. Tell people that it's out there.
My dad tells me all the time. Well, he's spreading the word to one person constantly.
There you go. Thank you, Kristen's dad.
Thank you, Kevin, for doing the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now I'll get to say to my dad, my friend that writes on the Jim Jefferies show did my show. You're right, like, oh, yeah, that's cool, yeah.
That's right, damn it.
Mm-hmm. Big time. So thank you for listening, as always. You guys are awesome. I'm so glad that you're here and that you found the show. If you want to give me a 5-star rating, that would be wonderful. Please do so and leave a little comment as well. And also, remember, you know the deal. Stay sad enough to listen, but not too sad. Bye, guys. Kevin's face for that was really great.
It's like, oh.